Chapter 5. Gilliman's Mercy. The Primarch's war had taken him away from the Star Realm of Ultramar, but still he found time to govern his home from afar. War raged in Ultramar, as it did everywhere else. The followers of the plague god Nurgle assailed the worlds of the Ultramarines, and the infernal diseases of the enemy claimed far more lives than their bullets. At Rabute Gilliman's direct command, sick and injured soldiers were being brought to the planet Ajax from across Ultramar. Ajax was tithed as an agri-world, but such was its beauty, it was informally referred to as the Garden Planet. That was before the war. The Empire of the Ultramarines was bleeding manpower at a terrifying rate, and so Gilliman had redesignated Ajax as a hospital world for the duration of the conflict. That is to say, most likely, forever. Landing the sick and wounded at Ajax's Hortusia spaceport took an amount of time congruous to the complexity of the task. The diseases spread by the enemy were supernaturally vigorous, so quarantine procedures had to be stringent. Like everything in Ultramar, if a job were deemed of importance enough to be done, then it would be done correctly. A fresh shipment of patients was coming in by shuttle. The decontamination crew returned to the landing field and its surrounding mushroom patch of white dome tents for the 17th time that day. Between each trip, the shuttles were cleaned on the wardships in orbit, for that was the responsibility of their Medicare captains, but ensuring the purity of the landing fields fell to the Chirurgeon General's office on Ajax. Though Caradamus, the Chirurgeon General, would have preferred to decontaminate the shuttles after their journey from Anchor to the surface as well, speed had to be given some consideration. Cleaning the landing aprons was faster than cleaning the exterior of the landers. His concerns were allayed a little by the Adeptus Mechanicus biologians attached to the Officio Medicae upon Ajax, whose atmospheric re-entry patterns were calculated to burn the worst of any contamination away. Magos Chromek had suggested the cleaning procedure could be omitted from the landing protocols altogether, but Chirurgeon General Caradamus was diligent, and if he could avoid risks, he would. Propaganda had its role to play. The ships were not serious vectors of infection. The soldiers they carried to Ajax from the war's multiple fronts were, but they couldn't be turned away. The outgassings of high-pressure cleansing hoses at the aprons could be seen for miles. They were reassuring. So the landing aprons were cleaned, and often. Upon Ajax, the lesser sick recuperated alongside the injured. Some of the diseases unleashed into Ultramar could be treated under median-range quarantine conditions with standard medicines. Others required specialist care, up to and including Adeptus Ministorum-approved exorcism. Those suffering from the more aggressive, spiritually corrupting illnesses were held in specially commissioned stations in orbit. As few as possible were euthanized. If they could be helped, they were. This, it was said in Ultramar, was the difference between Rabute Gilliman's and the Emperor's mercies, and the beleaguered people of that realm took heart in their lord's concern for their well-being. In typical Ultramarian style, multiple imperial ordos and officios were brought together to tend to the war's casualties, and they were made to cooperate with uncharacteristic amity. Regarding the screening of the injured and sick, the officio medicae was given free rein. Much of the processing went on in orbit. As the hospital wardships arrived from Ultramar's war zones, the wounded soldiers on board were screened for infectious agents. Those passing the first round were transferred to smaller void ships, most commandeered for this purpose from the Chartist merchant fleets, or taken from among those naval vessels too badly damaged to be made combat-ready quickly. The smaller, the better, in the Chirurgeon General's view, for smaller ships could be more thoroughly isolated. During transit from the front back to Ajax, the soldiers were kept in solitary confinement to prevent the spread of disease among their fellow patients, their physical needs attended to by servitors of only the highest classes of biological sanctity. There were not enough ships left to separate the sick from the injured before transit, not that it would have prevented cross-infection. So many of those wounded in battle harboured disease unawares. Around Ajax, troops exhibiting symptoms were divided by type. Those who had died en route were easiest to separate. After the dead, the first appraised were those suffering purely from injury, be it physical or mental. They were also rigorously tested for disease. Those who proved free of secondary infectious conditions were separated from the rest and taken to the surface via decontamination protocols at the Star Fort Corsteel, which had taken up anchor over Ajax for the purpose. The remainder of the casualties adjudged sick, injured or not, were returned to the main group. The sick were split into known and unknown pathogen groups, then further into physical, mental and spiritual afflictions, then by grade of severity, and finally all these groups were divided between the wounded sick and the merely sick. After all this, groups were subdivided into numbered cohorts and relocated to holding vessels in permanent orbit. There, further antibiological procedures were undertaken. Second and third rounds of testing virtually eliminated any possibility of transmission. Those that passed the third test were deemed safe and transferred to the surface of Ajax, bound for facilities that treated all ailments. Those who failed the second or third tests were kept aboard the isolation ships, where they were treated and repeatedly tested for pestilence. Those that improved were transferred in time. Those that did not were given their final blessings, and their corpses incinerated in psi-warded plasma pyres. Thus it was that, with breathtaking efficiency, huge numbers of Ultramarian casualties were broken down by stages into the smallest manageable groups. Hundreds of thousands of men became thousands, then hundreds, then tens, and all were thoroughly, relentlessly catalogued by the Officio Medicae's Divisio Descriptor. Elsewhere in the Imperium, such work would have been unimaginable. On most worlds, it would never have been undertaken. The sick would have been exterminated. The wounded would have been left to their fate. Not in Ultramar. The white and blue-clad human auxiliaries each represented a significant investment in training, and most had accrued substantial combat experience. By treating and returning its casualties to the war, the realm of Ultramar kept its armies fighting without loss of expertise or effectiveness at the height of the Imperium's darkest period.
"By the preservation of life do we maintain our capability to mete out death,"
so the Primarch had said. Or, at least, the records indicated he had said so. Now Gilliman was among the living once more, it was possible to ask him if all the words attributed to him were truly his. For the first 30 years, Gilliman had been in the habit of correcting his subordinates, insisting many of his supposed sayings were apocryphal, until he had given up in exasperation. He was simply not believed by most, for whom the Primarch remained an ideal. They valued their preconceptions of him over the living evidence. Despite this mass cognitive dissonance, no one could argue that the efforts to save the troops' lives were undertaken in a manner at odds with the Primarch's own beliefs. Though diminished in efficacy, something of Gilliman's meticulous methodology had survived the ages. Ajax had become the hub for all counter-plague efforts, a laboratorium and sanatorium both, where treatments for the war's ever-evolving sicknesses were concocted and disseminated to the fronts of Ultramar's war as fast as the enemy could unleash them. The processing of casualties was labour-intensive, no matter how efficient. Ensuring the purity of bulk landers was hard, so they were forbidden from the surface, but smaller lighters or shuttles meant more trips. As a result, landing all the troops from a single Medicae ward ship took a long time, and there were always plenty more waiting. To the untrained eye, the cleansing of the landing aprons was an impressive sign of the diligence with which the screening procedures were undertaken. In reality, it was the least important and easiest, entrusted to low-ranking ground crew and monotask servitors whose biologic components were sealed deep within inorganic frames. Ajax had a pronounced axial tilt, and the southern hemisphere's autumn was coming to an end. It was evening and growing cold as the cleansing team climbed down from their transports. They unspooled their lines and passed through a spray gate, the only gap in the complex of bubble tents around the field. Drenched in strong antibiologics, they paced to and fro, the huge hoses leading from the tankers looped over their backs and pointed at the ground. Their human forms were lost in the bulk of their protective suits, so that servitor and true man were hard to tell apart. Blasts of boiling water were followed by sheeting sprays of antivirals. Biokillers swept across the rockcrete. The water sent up huge columns of condensing vapor into the chill air. Appearances were maintained. When the cleansing had been done, priests in biohazard surplices marched out from the interconnected domed tents crowding the apron. They trailed back and forth over the antiseptic ground, flicking aspergillums full of sanctified oils to kill those psychic corruptions that chemicals could not purge. Finally, the quarantine masters, the mid-ranking Medicare officials, the Frater Hospitalar Majoris Inferior of the local Adeptus Ministerium, and purity officers from the commissariat came out from the tents, inspected the work, gave their approval, and affixed their seals to the relevant order parchments. Only then was a lighter given clearance to land. The whole process took half an hour, every single time. The ground crew were kept on hand in case the cleansing had not been performed satisfactorily. With relief, they watched their superiors march back into the clutter of bubble tents around the field. As the last closure zipped shut, the ground crew wearily rolled up their disinfectant hoses, retreated back through the spray gate to their service vehicles, and sped beetle-fast across the landing fields to grab 40 minutes of rest, one cleansing closer to the end of their 18-hour shift. The field was now yielded to several Medicae equipped with bulky auspexes attached to their suits with sealed flexible pipes. Angry red lights flickered condemnatory patterns on the instrument's upper surfaces. Bright points shimmered against the evening, thousands of feet into the sky. The lighter came in fast. When it had grown to a growling, angular shape, black against the low sun, the Medicae set off cleansing bombs around the landing apron that shot out plumes of astringent white smoke in noisy whooshes. The lighter touched down in a mist of antibiological agents, dropped its ramps without powering down its engines, and was away as soon as the last injured soldier was out of its hold. In this way, Tullius Varens of the Prandium 30th Ultramar Auxiliary Regiment came to Ajax. He shuffled onto the apron with 100 others like him, blinking against daylight after a week inside a dimly lit voidship cell. He carried nothing but his las rifle, his flak armor, and the uniform on his back. Everything else he owned had been incinerated.
"Stay close, Bolus," he said to the man beside him. "Don't wander off."
Bolus, an older man with rough salt and pepper stubble, stared ahead with the eyes of the profoundly disturbed. The Medicae came out of the chemical fog, shoving the exhausted troopers into a line. Varens was too weak to resist as rubber-gloved hands grabbed him. He growled out a challenge as his wounded back was roughly pawed.
"Careful," he said.
The Medicae manhandling him went on to the next man without comment. Varens shuffled along with the queue of men. He turned when he realized Bolus wasn't following him, but was still standing confused where the ramp of the departed ship had deposited him. Sighing, Varens went back to Bolus's side.
"Come on, Bolus," he whispered.
He took his friend by the elbow. Bolus had never been the same since the last assault at Connor's Reach. Once voluble and confident, he now went meekly where Varens led.
"Weapons in a pile in the red circle, armor and webbing in the green," a Medicae barked through voxmeters set into his thick armor-glass visor.
He pointed at painted circles offset from the entrance to the bubble tent complex.
"Uniforms in the blue."
"Everything,"
said one of the other soldiers. He was stupid with exhaustion. One of the Medicae waved his burbling medical auspex up and down his body.
"Everything,"
the Medicae said. Wearily, the auxiliaries stripped. Emaciated bodies shivered in the cool evening. Varens reached for Bolus's gun. His own las rifle slipped on a shoulder gone scrawny from months of poor rations, rubbing his injury. The gun felt like it weighed as much as a heavy bolter, but he gritted his teeth against the pain, unslung it, and took hold of Bolus's weapon as well, gently unhooking the strap from his friend's limp fingers.
"Best get undressed," he said to Bolus.
Bolus looked at him wildly.
"15! 15!" he said.
He jabbed a finger on his good hand at one of the other troopers, a man by the name of Gideon. Gideon was one of the few others Varens knew in the group. He was a braggart. Varens did not think much of him.
15,
Bolas said, urgently gesturing at Gideon.
Hey! Hey!
Varens snapped his fingers before Bolas's face. The older man quieted and stared at the weapons in Varen's hands with red-rimmed eyes, as if they affronted him.
What?
The guns, said Varens.
I'll deal with those. Get undressed, old man. I'll pile everything up for you. Don't draw attention to yourself. You got that?
Bolas nodded. Varens squeezed his shoulder. Reluctantly, he left him alone and trudged to the coloured circles. Guns and equipment made fragile-sounding clatters as they were tossed into piles on the rockcrete by the troopers. It didn't seem right to Varens, disrespecting their weapons like that, and he scowled at his fellows. Most of them were from worlds far away from his. They were too tired and too sick to notice his disapproval. He elbowed his way forward and carefully laid his and Bolas's gun down at the circle's edge.
You served me well, he said quietly, resting his hand on the stock of his rifle. I pray your spirit finds rest, if you are not to return to the war.
Leaving his gun was like leaving his heart on the floor, but when he stood and let out a shaky breath, he realized it was a release to be free of it. His hands went to the buckles fastening his webbing and armor. He was still clothed, but he was cold and shivering already, and his numb fingers struggled with the catches. It wasn't just the chill. His hurts troubled him. There was a core of flesh missing from his back, just below his shoulder blade. It was still raw around the edges, unnaturally hot. He had not even noticed receiving the wound. In one moment, what had once been simple had become permanently fraught with pain. Try as he might, he could not refuse to acknowledge the frailty of his own flesh. The evidence of his weak fingers slipping on the catches was right before his eyes. After half a minute of fumbling, the catch cooperated and undid. His shoulder plate slid weightily from his body, taking a good portion of his bodily warmth with him. He wasn't looking forward to taking his uniform off. Bolas's shouts had him looking up.
15!
Bolas was struggling in the restraining arms of a medike. He was trying to get at Gideon, his arms outstretched. Shouted orders from the medike team ripped across the throng, augmeter harsh. In a minute, there would be armed men emerging from the tents.
Don't know what's got into you, old man, said Gideon, as Bolas lunged towards him.
He smiled widely.
You should calm down. Easy street for a month or so, before we're back to the front. 15!
Shouted Bolas. He pawed at the medike's faceplate.
Stand down!
Shouted the man. His colleague was reaching for a compact Weber. It looked to Varens like the medike were used to this kind of thing. He wasn't surprised. The sights they'd seen were enough to drive anyone insane.
Hey!
Called Varens. He dropped his armor where it was and shoved his way back through the soldiers. A gaggle had stopped to watch, and it made the going tougher on the way back. He carved a path with his elbows. Bolas had made no move to disrobe or remove his armor.
Put your armor and webbing in the green circle, uniforms in the blue, one medike shouted.
The Weber was out now. Varens was afraid how Bolas would react if he were trapped again. They grabbed at Bolas hard, making the man twitch and wail.
Leave him be, shouted Varens. He's not in his right mind. He's suffering combat stress. Emperor's teeth, I thought you were healers. Can't you see? He'll be all right soon if you let him alone.
Bolas.
Bolas. Hey.
The medike parted enough to let him near.
Varens,
spluttered Bolas.
Yes, my friend. It's me. Do as the medike say. Do you understand?
Bolas looked at the medical staff suspiciously.
Bolas! Come on! Do you get it?
The medike still had his compact Weber out. Bolas was oblivious to the device. Hesitantly, Bolas nodded.
Strip! Said the medike. Armor in the...
Yeah, we get it, snapped Varens. I heard you 4 times already. I'll help him.
He interposed himself protectively between his friend and the medic.
We've been together for the last 2 years, fighting on Espandor. Where have you been?
I don't have to answer you, said one medique.
Here, said another. Only here. Then you don't know what we've been through. Give him his due. If it weren't for men like him, you and all this would be nothing but ashes and slime. Plague warriors, heretic Astartes, the walking emperor damned dead. Bolas and I have faced them all, while you've been having a fine old time in your rubber suits.
We're saving lives here, said the first medique. By the grace of the emperor. We all have our roles to play. We are here to help you, but you both need to be processed. If he won't cooperate, he won't make it.
Varens grabbed Bolas by the shoulder, a little too fiercely, making him flinch.
This man saved my life 5 times. You have a lot of catching up to do if you think I'll let him die.
Your choice, trooper.
The Weber came up. Bolas calmed. Some of what had been said must have sunk in, because he was unclipping his combat webbing.
No! No! He said. No, Varens! No!
His head jerked hard, barely under control. His armor slithered to the floor in a mess of straps. Mechanically, Bolas undressed. Varens did the same, watching his friend warily, but no more outbursts came. Bolas handed over his grubby white uniform. Varens bundled it up with his own. Their bodies, grimy and pale, were exposed to the unkindness of the autumn air. The medique finally holstered his Weber and passed his Auspex over Bolas. It burred to itself and clunked. A green lumen shone from the top.
He's clean, but keep him calm. This process takes time.
He'll be all right, said the kinder medique.
I understand, said Varens.
His anger drained away. He was on a hair trigger. Aggression had kept him alive, able to react quickly, effectively. Such an intense state of readiness didn't suit a place like this. The whole thing felt surreal to him. How could the medique understand? The medique waved his Auspex over Varens.
What happened to you?
Flesh wound. Got it fighting heretic Astartes, he said, flatly. Don't know how.
The medique wasn't impressed by Varen's claim.
If that's the case, you should be dead.
Are you calling me a liar? Said Varens.
I'm calling you lucky.
The Auspex made an angry bleat.
The wound is infected.
You don't say, said Varens. If a dozen screening processes hadn't told me that, the burn in the skin does.
The wound looks nastier than it is. It is not serious. The infection can be treated.
The green light shone, and the medique took the Auspex away.
Main tent.
Emperor, we know. We could do with a little empathy here. Get us inside, out of the cold, or we'll catch our deaths. We're men, not munitions pallets.
You're not a man until you've been checked and triple cleansed, trooper. Until then, you're a vector of infection that endangers this whole world. Now, keep your friend under control, or we'll have to give him the ultimate sanction.
We're here for Gilliman's mercy, said Varens.
The medique laughed behind his mask.
Mercy's in short supply. Dump your kit and proceed to decontamination.
The man was already waving his Auspex over the next trooper.
A disease vector, is that right?
Called Varens after the medique.
I check out Trooper Gideon then.
He pointed out the other man to the medique.
Bolas and I have been fighting the Plague Lords for so long, he's developed a nose for disease.
Varens helped Bolas put his uniform and equipment onto the right piles, then joined the line of shivering men heading into the tents. None of the auxiliaries were in a good way. Without exception, the naked bodies around Varens bore traces of past disease and trauma. A lot of them had passed this way before, as shown by the way they were lining up and doing what was required without being told, stoic throughout. Varens was cold, strung out and exhausted. Only the discipline instilled in him by the auxilia kept him from snapping, and that was close to wearing out. He still had space for a smile when he heard Gideon cursing and the Auspex binging angrily.
"Ship lice," the medic said. "External parasites, nothing serious. Get him into Tent 3, triple plus decontamination protocols."
Varen's turn came. He pushed his way through three sets of plastic strip doors and into the foggy air of a decontamination chamber. Chemical steam filled his nose and made his eyes water. His wound stung. Whatever awaited Gideon in Tent 3, Varens hoped it was less fun than this. He deserved it.
15, cackled Bolas, as if sharing a special joke. 15!
Varen's brief humour blew away like the steam billowing from the pipes. The counting thing was new, and he didn't like it one bit. It was another manifestation of Bolas's shattered mind. Varen's hoped a respite from the war would help his friend's mind heal, but he wasn't confident. He had seen battle shock before. The only cure that was sure to work was a mercy bullet. He never thought Bolas would fall prey to it, and that made him angry. Bolas had been so brave, so unshakable. If he could lose his mind, then anyone could.
"Come on, old man," Varen said.
He took hold of Bolas's arm again. His skin was damp and loose on wasted muscle, his regimental tattoos distorted by the sag.
"Time for a bath."
Under Bolas's armpit, there was a brief, squirming, maggoty motion. If Varens had seen that, he would have known that battle shock was the least of what ailed his friend. The thing turned and vanished into the cage of Bolas's ribs, undetected.